Welcome to the finale episode of What the Hat Season 2. We have shared journeys of a lot of people on this show. We thought we might as well start sharing our journeys. So for the finale episode today, our guest is one of our co-hosts, Hiloni Punnathar. Hiloni is an award-winning entrepreneur and founder of a digital marketing agency, WebShakers. She is a creative thinker and marketing strategist transforming the way brands communicate and engage with audience in the digital space. Armed with a strong background of technology and marketing, she has worked with various global brands across different industries like Future Group, Cipla, OnePlus, Realme, India Bulls, Saffron Stays, and many more. She has successfully expanded her business globally, and in this episode, we uncover her journey and perspective on the advertising and digital business at large and where she sees it heading.
We are three friends who are talking and learning from interesting people working in various industries, sharing their stories and journeys so far. These are your hosts,
Hiloni Punnathar,
Atit Kothari,
and Tapan Desai.
And this is What the Hat. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any episodes.
Hi everyone, today is the finale episode of season 2 of What the Hat, and we have a very special guest with us. It's one of our hosts, Hiloni Punnathar, who is also the founder of WebShakers.in. We thought it was about time we heard a very interesting story from one of our hosts. So this episode will be tracking Hiloni's journey and getting more insights on how do you become a boss after graduation, essentially. So we'll do that. Lots of insights, and we are excited to talk to you, Hiloni.
Thank you so much, Tapan. I am excited to be on our show as well.
Yeah, welcome to the show, Hiloni. How are you feeling?
Oh my God, excited. I have like butterflies in my stomach as to what's going to happen next.
Yeah. The tables have turned.
Absolutely. On this side of the chair now.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's get started. Let's not start from DJ. Let's do something different. How's US? How are you feeling? How was your transition to the US? And what are you doing right now?
Okay. So to be very precise on how my transition was to the US, I would say it was very transformational for me. Coming from Mumbai, where I have like an entire direction on how my life would be, what my day-to-day looks like, and most of my things pretty much aligned as to what I'm going to do, to coming to a country where I still had to figure what I'm going to do from my work end, how am I going to manage a house, from like finding a house to setting up a house and figuring out that when I get control of time in my life, how am I actually going to use it versus me going by the time that I had with me and just navigating through things in my life in Mumbai. So pretty transformational from the point that first 2 months were in a situation where I thought, okay, should I just go back? That was easier. That was way more. So I think that was more in the lines where I was comfortable with what was going on versus here being in a situation where you have a lot of time, a lot of control, but you don't know what to do because you've never been in that situation before. So it had been a tough journey, I would say, for me to transition because for most people, it's the other way around, but I was actually working India time, collaborating with my India office. So firstly, doing the time management the other way around, waking up probably at 4 or 5 in the morning to have at least 4 hours of overlap with my India team and my India clients. And then looking at how are you going to establish your company in a completely new ecosystem, a new country where people don't even know your company, people don't even know your background, and literally starting from scratch in a different environment. It was pretty, I would say, challenging, but something that actually also motivated me to change my ways of working or be more innovative about how I would go through these things, because it's the second time I'm restarting. Just the environment is different. So now I at least have those best practices and I can avoid the mistakes I made back then. So that was pretty good. And to be honest, now it's much better. In fact, I probably love the way my life is in US. It's so much more in control, so much time to allocate to different things that I personally like, so much self-exploration that has happened, and a lot of personal growth that has happened because of isolation, I would say, which otherwise was not possible in the environment that I was living in Mumbai.
Yeah, and Mumbai, like, we already always have someone, like something happening or some other event that you have to go to. Let's talk about how you managed your business while being in US, right? That was one of the interesting things that I think we touched upon. I think we chatted about this sometime. I don't remember when, but you said like you used to wake up really early and then like here the day will go on until late. So how did you manage that? Plus like with your clients and stuff, like how did you manage that as well?
So before I talk about how I managed the office remotely in the US, I would first want to talk about why I chose to make that decision that it's US would be a good expansion for the business. So for any marketing agency, I mean, there are two ways to grow. One is to kind of add better clients in terms of marketing budget, spends, and the activities that you can do overall for the brand in the geography that you're serving. Or you expand your business globally and serve larger number of clients, but on a global level. And I chose the later one, where I thought it would be great for us to have clients across the world and serve different industries globally. So that's how the decision was made, that it's okay to move to the US and expand WebShakers here. And the second thing, I think pandemic did work out for us in a way, was that we realized remote working is something that is possible for an organization like ours. And people are able to manage the work in the same capacity, and none of our workflow was getting disturbed. So that gave me the conviction that, even in this situation, we can definitely grow and scale and manage as a business. But at the same time, the pandemic brought a lot of challenges for us as a team. So we lost decent amount of clients during the start of the pandemic, because we used to serve industries which were either retail or their supply chain was highly dependent on global countries. So those businesses had to pause themselves, which led to, which impacted us. And at the same time, during the pandemic, a lot of our resources had the time to figure out whether they want to pursue education or they want to do something else overall. And because of which we also saw a decent amount of attrition rate. So with the economic challenges that were outside, there were a lot of internal challenges that we had to overpower as a company. But I would be extremely grateful to say that right now we are at the pace where we have doubled the number of clients that we lost, added way more global clients on our portfolio, and also reshuffled our entire team. And we are now at the pace where we are consistently growing. So the reason we were able to achieve this was, firstly, I'm extremely grateful how the entire team stepped up. And there was a time when the entire team did business development for WebShakers. There was also a situation where we internally realigned our offerings, re-questioned the industries that we want to target, which were thriving or which were growing because of the pandemic, and cater to them specifically. So I would say the second thing that was helping me manage the remote model or working out of any place in the world was the kind of systems that we build for our organization. Initially, or into the entrepreneurship world, I didn't value building right systems a lot. I thought it is more of like creating things on the go and tackling the situation when it comes to you. But eventually, I've realized that the stronger the processes and the internal systems that you have, the easier it is to transition, to scale, to transform. And that's one belief that I now strongly follow. And for every small task, we create SOPs. And for every big request, we have RFIs. So that way, we are able to kind of build stronger systems for our internal organization, which can help any new team member easily transition and take up the responsibilities. And I think the third most important thing that worked out and we have been able to keep that going is the optimism. And that's something that starts from top down. So firstly, believing that things are going to get better and having that optimism passed on to the entire team. That's very, very important as a leader. You have to show them the bigger picture, what's ahead in store, and keep that motivation going even in the best of times or the worst of times. And that's something that just comes with time and with experience.
Wow, that's truly a roller coaster. Lots of ups and downs. But so let's take a step back and if you could tell us, like, what does WebShakers do? And how big is the team? How big it was before the pandemic and how big it is now?
So basically, WebShakers is a full service marketing agency where we partner with brands to help them achieve their marketing goals. And the USP that WebShakers as a company has is we are the right balance of analytical and creative thinking. So that's where we strike the chord in making sure that we bring out the right communication while looking at our data, and it's pretty much data driven as well. So this is what we are. And in terms of our team size, we were a team of, I believe, 25-30 people before the pandemic. And during the pandemic, we had shifts. We didn't really lay off people, but we had transitions happening probably closer to October, November. Now we are a team of 20 people in WebShakers, and it's a growing team. We're still hiring and we're onboarding new people.
And then full service marketing agency, like what does that mean? Like, what do you guys do in general? What is marketing? Like, explain, like, AMP5.
I remember, I don't know, I think we've spoken about this like maybe before one of the episodes, but Hiloni and I recorded one episode, not about finance. I think you know about the finance one, but we also recorded about like just in general next marketing thing. And it was fun. We recorded one episode. We were very bad. At least I was very bad at it. But I could see the passion about marketing, you know, at the time in Hiloni. And I'm excited to see how you answer this and see how compare the two. Like, are you still passionate about it and how it has changed?
Absolutely. I would say marketing is one of the most fluid industries that is out there. Probably when we spoke back then in 2015, I believe, 2015, 2016, when we recorded that episode, what marketing was has changed from being a very highly focused marketing in terms of like television and outdoor media to now being majorly focused towards online marketing and OTT channels. So in overall, it has transitioned extremely from where the placement of communication would be. The core is still the same, the content, the creativity is still there, but now it's way more driven by data than intuition. So that has been a very big transition in marketing overall. But from coming back to Tapan's question, what does WebShakers do? So when we say full service marketing agency, it's basically we are a boutique
solutions company here, where today we understand, okay, what this is the brand, this is the industry that they belong to, this is the ecosystem, and this is the worldview of the consumer that is part of that ecosystem for that brand. And based on these analysis, we come up with, okay, these are some of the right platforms and mediums for your brand to go ahead and promote so that you can reach out to the right consumers and you can turn that into sales or into brand awareness or into business profits in some manner. So this is where our expertise come into picture. And we, being a young agency and being a new age agency, we are primarily focused on digital and we are more digital first. So we provide social media marketing solutions, SEM, SEO, affiliate marketing, influencer marketing. These are like some of the core services. And then you have your basic services like branding, website development, app development. So this would come in the overall gamut of marketing services that we provide.
Interesting. And how did you learn all of that? Because like, okay, so the first thing that always blows my mind whenever I talk to anyone running a business is you don't have to be motivated yourself. Like people just think about that. You just have to be motivated to start a business, but they forget always that you have a team under you whom you have to motivate as well. And there are times when I don't want to get out of my bed. Like how? So that's the first thing that blows my mind. Then comes, so you have to pitch to the clients, you do the sales. Then you have to understand the breadth of things, like the services that you provide. And at the same time, like understand data and all that. So there are so many things happening in a business. Where do you start and how did you start like learning all of this? I know it's a very broad question, but...
No, absolutely. So what I feel is that for me, entrepreneurship was a natural evolution. Coming from a family of entrepreneurs, that's something that I have seen in my house. And it's like people say, like, it runs in your blood. Entrepreneurship runs in your blood. So that's one aspect of it that I believe is true, because when you've seen people do that and when you've seen families of yours where they have gone from zero to something, you know that it's possible. At least that belief is there in you that if you put in that work and if you do it in the right manner, you are gonna get somewhere. So that initial dilemma that you have is already like made up for. After that, the next step is what would you want to do? So for me, after working in corporate for a year, I kind of realized that, okay, I'm not cut out for something like this. I've always felt like my potential was undervalued, or I was not able to bring everything that I had to the table. And also like family continuously telling you, okay, why don't you do something of your own? And having that motivation in place, I took that leap of faith and I was like, okay, let me start. And another thing that helped me with identifying what I wanted was the marketing management course that I did in Harvard. So it was this very interesting scenario, actually, where I was in my marketing management class and we were supposed to come up with a business idea in the Boston area, something that serves the Boston area, and come up with a business plan. And that would be like our entire course duration. And in the end, we had to like pitch the entire business plan with the prototype and everything. So while I was doing that, there was this situation where, when you are in dorms, you kind of have to do your own laundry, and being Indians and being a little spoiled, we have never done that back home. So when we had to do that for the first time, like some of my friends ended up like putting their whites and their colors together, and they realized that's not the right thing to do and spoiled a lot of their clothes. And it was so easy for us at that point of time to identify, okay, which is the best dry cleaning service close by. And just at a Google search away, we were able to find that option. They would come pick the clothes up and like deliver the finished products again. And that situation back in 2014 was very eye-opening for me. I was like, no small businesses in India have this opportunity. We don't even, at that point of time, we didn't even have Google My Business where you could actually see their listings. So you didn't even know probably how many dry cleaners you had around your house. Only the ones that you actually go to were the ones your primary cleaners would be. So that's when I realized, okay, there is a very big market in India, which is still untapped, which is yet to enter the digital ecosystem, which is yet to even like leverage that entire option of promotion that they have never thought of. And that led me to realize, okay, this is something I want to work towards, or I want to help like SMEs and MSMEs in India be on the digital platform and explore being on social and being available for people just a click away. And that's when I came back to India and started WebShakers. Initially, the journey was, okay, you don't know everything when you start a company. That's like a base rule. You have to be an avid learner and you have to accept whatever comes your way. One thing that I was very strong believer of is bias for action. You cannot take a lot of time making decisions, but you rather do those actions and see if you fail. You can always turn back and you can review it and you can change your course, but not taking one would actually lead you to like a would actually set you back. So that's one rule that I followed, and I dived into it. And then you have people around you who help you. You have a lot of resources online which help, which come handy. So being from an engineering background, didn't have a lot of knowledge about how do you do hiring, how do you do expectation management of the team, how do you handle the team, how do you do accounting, how do you manage cash flow, how do you communicate with clients to make sure your payments are coming in on time. Apart from like delivering the work, that is the core business, there are like 100 other things that come into picture, which you've not really thought of. When you actually dive into entrepreneurship, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to change brands and I'm going to change the way they communicate. That's your overall idea. But when you actually dive into the work, you realize, okay, there are 100 other moving parts that you have to take care of while you are doing the actual work that you're meant to be taking care of. So that was a journey, and I think I'm still moving on that journey. It's going to be an endless learning experience. But the more you keep doing, the more you will keep understanding what's the right way and what is the right way for you to kind of manage those set of work that has to be picked up. I mean, also like you then built a set of cheerleaders and mentors around you who support you and help you throughout that journey.
Talking about like, you know, motivating your team members, right? How do you do that? Like, do you have any system, incentive system?
So, I mean, motivating your employees is one of the most essential things I think an entrepreneur or a CEO needs to do, because their primary work is to make sure that the team who's actually doing the work is giving in their best. But before that, there has to be a sense of motivation that the entrepreneur has in themselves to kind of then pass it ahead. So that's one primary requirement, that you have to completely be motivated and sold on the idea that you are following, so that you can lead the team of those people who would also follow that path with you. And then secondly, there are like multiple ways to motivate your team. And I have done a lot of trial and error there, starting from like incentive models and like for like sales team having like cap incentives on percentages of the business that they bring in, to having team incentives where if you get a client appreciation email, then that team gets rewarded, to having like internal competitions between teams as to whichever has like better client value or like probably follower growth or some kind of a KPI metric that we identify, and then motivating them with some incentive in those manner, to doing regular one-on-ones with the team where you are kind of understanding where their growth map is and how can you be one of the primary person to help them in that journey, or having regular weekly group sessions, or taking the entire team out on a monthly basis to kind of cheer them up and give them a break from the mundane environment. Tried and tested a lot of them. And I believe there is not really a right mix that you would say, okay, these five things will lead you to that. It's more about the kind of team and the culture that you build and what works out for your culture. So identifying that is very important. Identifying that the team that you are building, what is their motivation point? Is it money, or is it acknowledgement, or is it like having that sense of working for brands where they see that they make a difference, or getting their work actually implemented on brands? It could be anything. It could be different for different people, but understanding what works out for your culture and then implementing that is very important.
How do you deal with like imposter syndrome? Like if you, like I'm pretty sure you know stuff, but like there are always times when you feel, okay, I am not knowledgeable enough about this thing. I shouldn't be making this decision, right? Like you always have that feeling in the back of your mind. So how do you deal with that?
I would say just wing it. It's easy to say than to do. I mean, but again, like here, my primary core principle comes into picture, bias for action. Instead of just thinking and figuring, okay, what could be the situation, or like doing a lot of pros and con analysis, you rather just take one of the decision and see whether it works out for you or not. Sometimes it would not, and it would backfire big time. But it's something that you have to be okay with and you have to live with. In fact, I remember this in very early on in my journey. I had this very important client meeting, and we had done a beautiful pitch and we had cracked the client. The only part that was left was like negotiation. And this was me being called into the meeting with a CEO who is 55 years old, known to be one of the best salesperson in the industry, and somebody who's extremely cutthroat and knows how to negotiate and like get the right money or like make the most of the time. And I'm sitting there, young into it, probably had like two meetings before that ever in my life with a CEO. And there he's like negotiating up and like left, right, center. Okay, I want this, I want that. Probably add five more services and cut down 20% of the budget. And the only thing I had to do was sit there and stand by what I believe in and why I have quoted X amount. And take that risk, whether he would go ahead with me or he might just cancel the entire agreement with us. And that was a big deal for me at that point of time, because, okay, there were some of the new set of plans that I wanted to onboard. So taking that risk at that point of time was very important, and standing my ground was very important. And that's when I realized that people value that. I did stand to the amount that I was supposed to be, I mean, what I'd quoted, but at the same time, probably the deliverable came down. So it was part of the negotiation that I had to accept, but it was somewhere a win-win for me. But the one thing I realized after coming out of that meeting was, after like probably stepping out of the office, there was these 5 minutes where I just bursted out in tears. Like I was still not able to fathom the situation that, okay, I was in that room doing that negotiation and I could manage it, I could do it. So that self-belief somewhere is very important to have from day one. It obviously builds over time, but that's one of the things that you need when you make those decisions. And when you feel you're having imposter syndrome, you have to probably have that self-belief that, okay, you're going to deal with it. Whatever comes next, you're okay with the worst case scenario as well.
Yeah, like one of the best negotiation tips that I got was be willing to walk away from the deal, right? If you walk into the deal with that mindset, I think you have a higher chance of winning the negotiation. But yeah, kudos, like you stood your ground in front of one of the, you know, those big time CEOs, big personality. So yeah, I can imagine the emotion building up, and once the meeting is done, it comes down, crashing down, right?
Oh. Yeah. It was just one of my eye-opening meetings. I think probably after that, I was like, okay, whoever comes in, I am ready to sit there and negotiate and make sure that they understand why what is the value that we are offering to them as a company.
Yeah. I think it's the Pokemon model, right? After a fight, if you win the fight, it doesn't matter the outcome, you evolve, right? You become, you go to a higher state. So yeah. I think whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger, I guess.
Yeah. I love the comparison with the Pokemon. Yeah.
You talked about a lot about like sales and negotiation, right? So what are your lessons learned or top three tips that you have for anyone who's interested like me?
Absolutely. So I think one thing that I always live by or go into any negotiation or sales communication is doing research. It could be about the industry, about the brand, and the person that you are actually going to go and sit down and have that conversation with. Having that context always gives you the upper hand. So that's the first tip.
Let me pause you there. Do you have like a checklist of things that you research on them, like, or it's just general background research that you can find?
So I mean, the things that I actually look for, I don't know if I always find them, but I would definitely look for finding some common ground with that person. So either some hobby or some interest or some past experience or some school where there has been some common ground that we have that makes the conversation easier. And I think just secondary would be to understand their background, where they come from. What is their inclination? Are they more towards data, numbers, tech? What is it that would drive them or make them say that yes? What is that tipping factor for them? Based on some of their experiences, you kind of understand, okay, they would be somebody who will look at creativity, or somebody who will look at numbers, or somebody who will be pure play sales. And then you know where you want to take your conversation, and where would be that tipping point where you know that if you say this, they might get convinced or they might accept what is there for you to offer. So that would be the second. And third would be purely like competition. If you're going for X brand, just see like three other brands who are doing Y, and what is it that is setting them, like if their competition is doing better, and bring that to the table while you're doing that negotiation. So these definitely help in like making sure they are convinced about what you're selling. I think the second point would be the scenario that I mentioned before, and something that Atit rightly said as well. Stand your ground, and always in a negotiation situation, think about it's okay if you don't get this. And that's when you will always be in a much more composed, patient manner. And you will, have the client do most of the talking, and you can always be in that situation where you know where you want to kind of draw that line and take it ahead or not. And having that power, or at least having that feeling of having that power, is very important. And I think the third thing specifically in a negotiation is let the opposite person bring the numbers first. Never be the first one to reveal the numbers. So in generally in marketing, there are two aspects to it. One is the retainer, and second is the marketing spends. That's how much a brand has a budget to invest in digital platforms like Facebook, Google, or OTT platforms or whatever. So my basic way of going about this is, most people don't tell you what the retainer spends they would want to give, but you can always understand that what is their marketing budget. And from that, you can always gauge how much would that person be willing to pay and how much service would they require based on the budgets that they push out. So I always make sure they give me that number before I have anything that I want to give them or any number that I want to pitch to them.
Okay. That's smart. Standing your ground. That's something that I will have to learn, I guess. I get very awkward when there is silence, or I feel okay, they might not budge or something. I might have to go in, so I compensate for that by just giving a low number or something like that.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
It comes with experience. I think initially when you are hungry for work, you might do that, but then once you realize and once you have your plate full, you have that liberty to take that decision to say no also. And that's when you feel, that's when I experienced it for the first time and I realized, why don't I do this every time?
Let's take the conversation back to marketing, where in 2014 you saw that in India there is a huge growth opportunity, right, in terms of digital marketing and stuff. So where do you see marketing going next?
I would say geographically in India, I think digital marketing is just begin. With the onset of Jio probably in 2018, the number of people, potential users of digital platforms grew multifold. So these users have just, I mean, still acquired internet. They are yet to be in that space where they are avid social media users, avid consumers of different apps. So I would say in India ecosystem, it's still growing. It's just at that stage where it's reached tier one and tier two, and it's yet to penetrate into like the smaller areas. And once it does that, it's going to see like an extremely big boom. And secondly, at least in India market, there is a very big growth of hyper-local based marketing with like different language content. So that's something that's growing a lot. Multilingual content, specifically to the geography that you're catering to or the one that you're marketing to, that is seeing very, very good growth, and it's seeing like really good conversion in different fields. So that's where it's heading. And I think from a global perspective, it's now going more towards an automation model. At least in US, this is something that I'm seeing, where a lot of marketing activities are getting automated and more focus is now back to how creative your content is or how well you can leverage that creativity to grab that 2 second attention span that a consumer has and like make sure that your content clicks with them within those 2 seconds. So creating short content, which will entice a consumer in the fastest possible manner, that's where overall the content aspect is going towards, while a lot of other things are getting more automated. I mean, all these platforms are trying to make it more AI driven. So a lot of decision making is done by the AI rather than humans. So that's somewhere it's heading. So probably, I don't know, in a few years, a lot of these jobs might get redundant and some new jobs might come up. But this ecosystem has been so fluid overall, like I mentioned initially, from when I entered the space in India, there was like most brands had like 80% of their marketing budgets for outdoor media, for newspaper ads, magazine ads, all of those things. And today, before COVID, like in 2019, that had already shifted to like a 60% towards outdoor and 40% towards digital. And I think in the last 1 year, it has moved way more drastically from there. And it probably now could be 70% digital and 30% offline media. So that's how quick the transition has happened in terms of budget spends that the brands have. So that shift is also going to create that level of jobs and that level of requirement. I mean, digital marketing has been since the last 3 years one of the most studied courses in India and one of the biggest employment opportunity in India as well. So this space is here and it's here to grow. And more and more people are going to require it and more people are going to provide that service.
There was one point you made about like lessons learned, like in US, you were talking about like what is happening in US. Do you think like whatever happens in US in terms of marketing, at least it's always directly applicable to the Indian market? Or it's like, because if I think about the way Indian society works, it's more, I feel, US is more convenience driven, I feel, and then India is more of a relationship driven. Like, you know, if I know a Kirana wala, I'll go to that person because I know that person every time to buy my groceries. In US, it will be Amazon because it delivers to my doorsteps rather than going down to a local store, you know?
Yeah, but there is the element of brand loyalty, right? Like there it is, you're loyal to your Kirana wala. Here I'm loyal to my Starbucks store or the Amazon, you know, website. So I think there is, you know, if you had to abstract it at a higher level, it's more of that loyalty thing. I don't know. I'm just guessing, but Hiloni might be better at answering it.
Yeah. So I would say there is a very big difference between India market and US market is that India market is price driven. I mean, the one that provides the lowest cost is something that people would highly consider. Definitely try. If they don't like it, probably not be loyal to that, but they'll definitely look at price as one of the primary elimination factors for any other brand. And that similar thing is very different in the US. People are very quality and loyalty driven. They want quality at whatever price it takes, which is affordable for them in their bracket. And second, they are definitely brand loyal. So that's something that is still building in India. It's not yet there. Penetrating into a already established loyalty market is also easy by giving the right incentive and the right pricing. You can still penetrate into that audience and that set of consumers. And I think another point that Tapan made, so I don't think that the activities that happen in the US are directly correlated to what will happen in India. In fact, there is some years lag that you would rather see. So things that I saw in probably 2014, the way marketing was happening in the US, that's something that I'm seeing probably right now in 2019, 2020, that the adoption has happened in India. It's yet happening, I would say, versus in US, it's already like an established space. Already most brands have like online presence. They're already pretty much like their checklist of having a website, having Google My Business, having social media presence, having loyal consumers, emailers, SMSs, all of those parameters already in place versus that's something that most brands are yet building in India. So it's definitely, it always comes with a lag of like some years. The bridge is getting smaller with the awareness and internet availability everywhere, but it's still there.
So women entrepreneur, we've discussed this with like on a lot of episodes, I think discussed it with Natasha, Pooja. So like how difficult was it for you to start? Like, do you have stories that you want to share? And also, what advice would you give a woman who's just starting her entrepreneurial journey?
Okay. I mean, this is one topic that is very, very close to my heart because I strongly believe in women. I mean, that's something that I have grown towards, and that's women empowerment and women being financially independent. Recently, I was hearing this podcast between Ranveer Alabadia and CRED CEO Kunal Shah, and he mentioned that I think 68 or some, I don't remember the exact percentage, but that that much percentage of women in India are still financially dependent. And that was very shocking for me. And that's when I realized, okay, this is not a good situation. I mean, with that dependency comes a lot of things that women have to put up with, because then they don't have a choice. It's always like they have to abide to what is told to them or what they have to do. It's not even like an option that, okay, we will do this. So that's where I feel like a lot of women need to now step out and take their stance, be it their entrepreneurial journey or be it a job or whatever. It's very important for each of them to have their own career path and to be financially independent. So being a women entrepreneur, I don't know firstly why like it is always differentiated like everybody's an entrepreneur. Women entrepreneurs are not doing anything different. Obviously for them it's a little different journey because the field has been dominated by male for a very long time. So the number of the support system for them is very, very low, and the number of mentors that you look for in any space which are women entrepreneurs would be also very low, or people in management overall in most companies that I have worked with or I've seen as clients, very few women driven management teams are there. So that's one challenging part where you kind of have to break those biases that people have already. Also, because of these statistics that I mentioned, what happens is, this is something that is personally my thought, that a lot of entrepreneurs or people who are wanting to work with female entrepreneurs have this mindset that most women probably don't take up their work seriously, or they take that up as an option. Their career is not a mandate, but an option. And because of that mindset, they probably have some biases when they want to recruit teams which are women-driven or women-led. And that's something that is changing with time, and it will take its due course where more and more women have to kind of prove that or break that glass ceiling to make it more acceptable. So definitely there are, I wouldn't say challenges, but different approaches that women entrepreneurs need to take to make their space in the industry, to get the same work probably any other entrepreneur would also be opting for. And this has happened a couple of times for me as well, where you there has been more doubt about your caliber, about your experience, about your background, about your team, because of the biases that those people hold. And I wouldn't blame them, because it's something that they are also evolving with. But it has been a little different. And at the same time, there have been like times where you would be the only female person in the room, with room full of like 40, 50 year old men, probably 10 of them as well, doing your pitch meeting. So it's a different experience. It's something that makes you stronger, makes you learn a lot more. And I would say the more women keep doing that, the more they are kind of making the world, or making at least the other entrepreneurs believe that they have the equal amount of talent and equal possibility to bring the same results that they would otherwise work with any other team. So that's the primary challenge that most entrepreneurs who are females face. And I think it's changing, it's evolving, it will take its time, but it will definitely bring in more and more, or motivate more and more females to take up entrepreneurship.
Yeah, you know, like I think Warren Buffett said that America has done so well with just 50% of the population, right? This was like in 1950s, 60s, right? Similar goes for India also. 50% of the population is women, and they haven't even entered the workforce. So imagine what could happen when India has done so well with just 50% of the population. There's and yeah, I think you guys are, you know, paving the ways for like more women entrepreneurs and just women in the workforce.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I would let any women who's trying to be, trying to start their own venture, I would definitely tell them that it's very important to have that self-belief and faith and just go for it. What's the worst case scenario? You will fail, but that failure comes with a good amount of learning, which you can carry with yourself in any path that you take up next. So it's very important to take that first step and make that leap of faith and go and do that. I mean, you have to like at least try. You cannot be 50 or 60 at that point of time, you realize and you look back at your life and you say, oh, I wish I would have done these five things, or I wish I would have started. Now is the time, and it's always important to understand what you like, what you believe in, what you can give back to the world. And this is something that I know for sure, that once you take it up, you are definitely going to excel at it, and you're definitely going to do well in it.
Cool. Let's start our next segment. Top three book recommendations, Aloni.
So firstly, I'm not a very avid reader, but looking at Tapan and Atit, I have been motivated, and that's where I have built my reading habit. One book that really helped me, which I would recommend to everybody, would be Atomic Habits by James Clear. I didn't realize the concept of systems, concept of habits before I actually read that book. And it brought a lot of perspective, even when I was transitioning to the US environment, as to how having a disciplined life and having those habits would make a bigger difference in the long run. To be honest, when in India, I was under that mindset that having a discipline is such a boring thing in life. Like, how can you not have a different evening every day, or like a different weekend every time? But after getting into a routine and having that discipline, you realize how much mental space that brings to you. And with that peace, you can be more creative. You can do a lot more things which you otherwise would not be able to. I think the second one would be marketing specific, and nobody better than Seth Godin. This Is Marketing is one of the books I love. And I've learned so much from people's worldview, to how do you analyze and differentiate between consumers, how do you understand which brand placement can happen in what segments, and a lot more, like how much emotional quotient is required in your communication than just talking about product promotion. So great insights from that, and a lot of his other books as well. But this one is something that I personally love, This Is Marketing. other book that I would recommend is Palace of Illusion by Chitra Banerjee. And that is the entire description and narration of Mahabharata from Draupadi's point of view. And that talks about a lot of female characters in Mahabharata and how, what kind of role they played, which probably was never portrayed in the original version. This is primary fiction, but I don't know. Somehow it makes me believe that some of it is real and kind of brings a very different version of a mythical story or something that we have learned and grown up understanding from a very different angle. And it's kind of empowering for some reason.
Top three movie, TV show recommendations.
Okay. I mean, there are a lot of those. I am a big TV show person. But I would say one of the favorites that have been my recent favorites is The Office. And I think all of us will agree with it. I remember Atit telling me to watch it probably in 2014, 2013. Yeah. And at that point of time, I saw like two episodes and just like didn't go ahead with it. And then finally in 2020 is when I actually took it up and saw the whole series with Prerak. And I mean, you have to, it grows on you and it takes time. But once it does, like you really appreciate the way the show is made.
So yeah. Next two, other two.
The other two from TV show's point of view, I really enjoyed Big Bang Theory. And the third recommendation that I would have, which I really recently saw and I really liked, is World War in Color. So finally, for the first time, I actually realized what the world history was and kind of got an understanding of it. I don't know what our history books did, but we had like, I think one chapter or two chapters in our 10th grade, which spoke about the entire World War. And it was way beyond that. And there were so many moving parameters. This kind of gave me a good glimpse into what happened. And I really, really like that show.
Yeah, cool. Next, favorite podcast?
Oh, I would say podcast. All Our Friends podcast to begin with. Specifically, this show, What the Hat, you definitely should listen to it. And you're going to learn so much about different people's journey. Then Cold Brew Money, I have been an avid follower and I've learned so much about personal finance. I actually made my mom listen to the show. For the first time, she understood or like came to know about what finance is and how can you actually take care of your own finance. Then I would recommend Dollar Gujarati of our dear friend Daksh and Atit. And I think the next one I would also talk about is Naturally Curious by our friend Monil. So these are some of the top ones from our friends that I personally love and would recommend. Apart from this, from a marketing point of view, Advertising is Dead is one of my favorite podcasts. It's by Varun, Glitch CEO. So fun story, but I actually interned in Glitch when I was in engineering. And I did like a 3-month internship there and I was working with Varun at that point of time. I don't know, but it was one of those times when you probably realize that, okay, this is something that you like and maybe something you want to pursue in future. And when I made that decision of starting my agency, I had that picture of Glitch in my mind. And that's something that I knew as what agency would look like. So that that has been a very good memory for me. And his podcast is brilliant for anybody who's in marketing and advertising space. I think the other one that I like and which every entrepreneur would is How I Build This. Gives you like a great understanding right from the start of like an entrepreneur's journey from a product industry or a service industry and how have they been able to get to where they are. Lot of good learnings, lot of good lessons that you can actually implement in your journey. So that's another podcast I would recommend. I think one YouTube channel that I have learned a lot from is Crash Course. It's by John Green. Coming from an engineering background and like not knowing anything about arts and literature and psychology, I remember taking up the psychology sessions on that and it gave me so much context and that really helps me even today in my marketing campaigns, like understanding consumer behavior comes in very easy when you have the background of psychology. So that was a good place to have like quick learning about these topics. So that's one thing I would recommend. And another one that I follow very avidly, or I don't know, their SEO or their YouTube advertising is so strong, is Sadhguru's YouTube channel. For some reason, after like few episodes, it just keeps popping on my YouTube. And I have been an avid listener, and I think it's helped me in my spiritual journey. With like very easy communication and to the point relevant topics that he talks about, it's really helped kind of bring, narrow down few theories and concepts that you have, and how you can actually grow your spiritual journey while you are also pursuing your dreams and your company and your work overall. And one thing I've realized is it's not like either or one after the other. They all have to be in a simultaneous movement, and that's how you'll be able to like grow in all those aspects. And that's where his YouTube channels really helped me do that.
That was it, folks. Thank you, Hiloni, for joining us today on your own show.
Thank you so much. It has always been a pleasure talking to you guys, but today was extra special. Thank you.